Hey friends, it's James Teensma, the host of The Art of Letting Go. And each time we release an episode, I share just a little bit more about my story. Today's story is called Defying Gravity. And it's not about the musical Wicked, but instead it's about anxiety. And sometimes how I'd rather hold on than to let go. Let's talk about it right now on The Art of Letting Go. I gotta tell you, I am a huge fan of musical theater. I have been for 35 years at least. And having performed musical theater, I can tell you that my love for it just seems to get deeper and deeper. One show that's not on my list of loving is Wicked. I don't really want to like that show. The music, especially this song, Defying Gravity, just seems to sound like fingernails on a chalkboard. Oh, I'm so sorry, because I know there are real fans of it. But it's the singers. It's Idina Menzel and Kristen Chenoweth. And now every single actress out there wants to sing and sound like them. And that's wonderful, but it's just not for me. So the other clear option was to name the episode Gravity, which is a song by John Mayer. And John Mayer rates just barely above those two as far as likability for me. I know he's got the suburban housewife all locked up, and I probably just shot down other listeners. But it's just all personal choices, right? And I suppose this is why we're told never to talk about politics or religion, and now music. So I won't. What I do want to talk about is anxiety, and specifically the fact that I, along with millions of Americans, go day to day to day, trying to get through the day sometimes, struggling with our anxiety. For me, anxiety manifests itself through the idea of gravity. And for the first time ever, I would like to share that with you. So stick around, and we'll do just that. So before I tell my story, I want to at least make people who don't understand anxiety disorders understand a little bit about what can happen to people listening who might. What happens is sometimes those of us with anxiety and anxiety disorders and panic attacks, when we listen to somebody else talk about their story, it can trigger an episode of anxiety. Even saying the word anxiety and that somebody else struggles with it can sometimes get us worked up. And it gets very hard for us to tune in, but also to let it go. Because then we find ourselves in the midst of that anxiety or in the midst of a panic attack. So for those of you who are like me and have a tendency to get anxious when somebody else talks about their anxiety, let me encourage you right now. My story of anxiety is probably the silliest one you'll ever hear. And that's okay, because it's mine. But I believe in you and your processes to get through anxiety. So try to breathe. Understand you are loved, and make sure that you are taking care of what your needs are when it comes to how you handle your anxieties. Okay. We'll call that the business side. But let me tell you, I care deeply about people who struggle with anxiety. Because for me, I don't really know the first time that anxiety played a role in my life, which either means I blocked that particular episode out, or it's just been a part of my life for so long, I wouldn't be able to timestamp it. I would probably guess that it happened near or around the time I started having health concerns. But in my head, I believe there were episodes before that that started to at least make me anxious or concerned about being anxious or nervous. So I'm still going to peg it in my early teen years. And for me, it's continued on now for 3 or 4 decades. Now, there have been amazing timestamps or time gaps or lapses of no anxiety whatsoever. None whatsoever. And I'd like to say it's freeing, but again, that's what we would call a normal state. Not that being anxious is abnormal, but we kind of know it is. Those of us with it wish we didn't have it. And if we're wishing we don't have something, it's abnormal to have it. But I do remember specific episodes, and I'll at least mention 2, and we'll see how the time is when I'm done. I remember my worst episode, and I'll talk about it first so that we can get it out of the way, breathe again, and maybe find a little hope, a little joy, because it's a little silly, and resolve on the other side. So I don't know the exact date, but I do know that it was the day before my brother Joe married his wife Christy. I was 25 years old. And let me tell you, I know some people say that your midlife crisis happens in your late 40s, early 50s. Mine happened at 25. Ripe old age of 25. Quarter century, by golly. And there was something about the age of 25 that really affected me on a deeply, deeply emotional, spiritual level. I don't know what it was. I think it was, quite honestly, I was closer to 30 than 18. And it kind of sunk in that here I am at 25, and I wasn't educated necessarily. I had 2 children, both of whom had their own health concerns. I had my own health concerns. So there was a lot going on for 25. I loved my jobs. I just felt as though I had kind of maxed out my potential in doing them. And that's not a lie. I just had. But I didn't really have the skills to do more. So anxiety was becoming a very common occurrence for me. I would sometimes just have a quick episode where I would think about the future, and the future wasn't, like Timbuk3 said, the future wasn't bright, so shades weren't necessary. Instead, the future looked cloudy. If that makes sense, like if I'm looking in a crystal ball and you've got that, you know, Hollywood image of the soothsayer telling you what the future is, and you look in the crystal ball and you say, "Tell me, O wise one, about my future." And she looks at it and she says, "I don't know. It's too foggy." That made me nervous, that whole idea that I don't really know what my future looks like. But I loved being in the moment. It scared me when I wasn't in the moment, when I had to think about the future. And I think what got me worked up around the time of my brother's wedding was just this idea that we're not kids anymore. Our lives now mean something to other people. And for me, at least, I felt like even though I was a dad and I was a husband, I wasn't necessarily great at either one. I don't know that my health allowed me to be as present as I wanted to be. And so it started to affect me. And here was Joe, starting out his life with his wife. And he was moving and accomplishing the goals that he was setting out for himself. And I couldn't have been more proud as a brother. But there was something about those moments, this combination of events that seemed to come to a head the day before his wedding. And I'm driving down to the rehearsal dinner. I was coming from work, so it was a bit of a drive. I don't remember exactly what triggered it, but something did. And my panic attack went a little like this. I started to get very, very dizzy. Very dizzy. And if you've suffered with panic attacks, you know that that's rather common. It feels like the world is closing in on you. And again, I'm hoping I'm not triggering anybody. For me, it went one step further. It felt as though somebody was going to shut gravity off. And the next hill I came to, I was going to just keep going up, up, up. That's silly, right? It was so real for me, though, that I had to quite literally pull my vehicle over to the side of the road. I put it into park. I tried to decide what I could do next because I don't want to be in the car when it floats away. So I got out of the vehicle. This is a true story. And I crawled underneath my car. I was that afraid that gravity would be shut off that I crawled underneath my parked car alongside the highway. And I waited. I didn't know what I was waiting for. I think that if I could somehow grab onto the ground and then the car floated away, at least I was still on earth and I would crawl somewhere. And, you know, your brain doesn't function right in an anxiety episode, in a panic attack. Nothing makes sense. And I would like to say that that was a one-time thing, that this idea that gravity would be shut off would somehow just happen one time. It didn't. In fact, what's happened over the last 30 years is when those episodes come, it always has to do with the idea that the next hill that comes will be the one where I float off and I cannot control it. And gravity has been shut off. And not in some way like we all dream as kids to be Superman or Wonder Woman or whatever the case may be, where we can somehow manage to be gravity-less. I'll make up another word. It wasn't that. It wasn't fun, the idea of being without gravity. It was scary as hell. And so that was the first time I remember very specifically that gravity had really played this major role in my anxiety attacks, excuse me. But it was not the last time. In fact, it seems to happen more often when I'm not well regulated, when I'm lacking sleep, when I'm overly emotional. Or when I'm driving on I-69 going from Fort Wayne to Indianapolis. When I'm returning to Fort Wayne from Indianapolis, there is a curve, and it's a long curve. It's a long curve. And it seems to take forever to round this curve. And if I am not prepared, it will catch me off guard. Every time, and I'll slip into a moment of panic, because then I think that it's just going to keep curving and eventually we'll hit a hill and off I'll fly. Anxiety is not fun. And so I try to be more aware of when anxiety might strike. But it really is kind of a guessing game. And those of you who struggle with it know that. So I sought out help. There came a point last year in 2019, after a series of personal losses, which, as we've talked about, included the loss of my dear friend Bill. And Maggie and I had decided that we wanted to take, for the first time in 5 years, we wanted to take a personal vacation together, just her and I, no other family. And we did that. And it actually started in Chicago at a family reunion. And we decided after that that we would drive from Chicago out to the Poconos, out to Pennsylvania. That was going to be an intense drive, 16, 17 hours. But we were looking forward to it because we were going to be together and it was going to be at night. So I didn't have to worry about driving through the mountains. I didn't have to worry about seeing either on the left or the right that the road may actually be non-existent, or my safety net of having grass next to me may be non-existent. And the trip was smooth and it was flawless. But that next morning when we arrived there, I started to feel panic creep in. While we're sitting inside of our little condo, panic started to set in, and I started to fear the idea of continuing our vacation. We had plans to go to Philadelphia, which was, for me, would have been just an amazing experience because I'm a huge Rocky fan. I attest that every lesson you need to learn in life, you can learn from one of the Rocky movies, and a couple in Creed too. So I wanted to experience that whole Rocky thing at the Philadelphia Museum of Art and run the stairs, even though I'm completely out of shape and winded halfway up. But I was going to do it. And then we wanted to experience the 4th of July like no other 4th of July, because neither of us really like it. So let's go do something that's completely radical for us. And we went to Washington, D.C. and experienced the 4th of July there in our nation's capital. How exciting. Except for where we were in the Poconos, the drive was very daunting because there were mountains and long stretches of curvy road. You got it. That really twisted me up. More importantly, it happened in the daylight, not at nighttime when I couldn't see what was to the left or the right of me. And so those moments that I did not anticipate well because it was in the daylight had a tendency to freak me out. And one particular moment, as we were driving to Washington, D.C., we came across the bridge in Baltimore named for Francis Scott Key. I jokingly tell my wife that anytime there is a bridge named for a famous person, it's going to be a bridge that's rather high off the ground. And this one was. I actually looked up pictures thinking I might be able to cross over it as a driver. And again, I was wrong. And again, I pulled the vehicle off to the side of the road and trying to emulate my safety of crawling underneath the car, I crawled into the back seat and I covered myself and I prayed that we could get over the bridge as quickly as possible. On the way back, we made a course that was 45 minutes out of the way just so we didn't have to cross that same bridge. That's how terrifying panic can be when you cannot expect it or you cannot work your way through it. Since that bridge kind of came up upon me before I had a chance to really absorb it, I only saw a picture. And it sent me down the rabbit hole. I was convinced gravity was going to shut off before we even got across the bridge. As we left Pennsylvania, I started to notice, because we left in the early morning, just exactly how mountainous those areas were. And as I was driving, I was letting Maggie rest because I knew that we were going to have to split driving details. So I decided to drive first. And as I was driving, and I'm realizing how sharp some of these clifty areas were, I started to panic. And I knew that I had to keep going. But I slowed down to what I would call blue hair pace. I'd be on an interstate where I could go 75 miles an hour, but my foot couldn't seem to push that pedal much beyond 50. Because I didn't know what was coming up on the other side of that hill. Just like those other moments in my life where I've had panic happen, it was because I didn't know what was going to be on the other side of the hill. I didn't know what was around that curve. So I decided once we got back that it was time to talk about it. And I've never talked publicly about it. And that's why I think this is a wonderful place to be able to share it with you. My counselor, I think, was trying to do what we would call a tough love approach, and called that whole idea ridiculous. Well, you know gravity is not going to be shut off. That's ridiculous. Well, I know that. Thank you for letting me know. That's why I'm here, though, is I want you to kind of help me with some exercises in how to let go of that fear. That didn't work out, but he said something that really struck home. And that was that my anxiety was coming from fear of the unknown. So when I'm having a panic attack, it's not because I actually truly believe that the gravity is going to be shut off. It's that whatever is triggering that event is in the unknown. Like, that's obvious, right? He said something else to me that made so much sense. As I'm driving and I'm having these episodes, it may not be the anxiety that's causing me to want to stop. It's the not knowing what's on the other side of the hill. It's being out of control. And so he posed this question for me. Has what's been on the other side of the hill ever let you down? Follow that question. Has what's ever been on the other side of the hill, around the curve, has it ever let you down? And I had to answer no. Every time I've gone over that hill, or every time I've gone around that curve, metaphorically or physically, I've never been let down or disappointed by the result. You know what's on the other side of the hill? More road. More road to conquer. Maybe it's smooth road. Maybe it's another hill, but it's not as big. But I'm never going to know unless I actually get over that hill. If I pull that car over because fear has enveloped me, and I crawl under the car, or I try to emulate it in the back seat of the car, because that episode with the Francis Scott Key Bridge was not the first. I would travel to Canada with my friend Matt, and coming over the Blue Heron Bridge, I had exactly the same experience. I had to cover myself in the back seat with a blanket and silently say a prayer that the bridge wouldn't give way, that the gravity wouldn't be shut off. And there have been dozens of experiences like that in my life. My kids have seen it. And thankfully, they don't make fun of it. They don't try to make light of it. They understand after it happening for so long that it's one of those things that acts as a trigger for me. But this therapist said the most incredible realization for me. And from that moment, it's really helped me to not only try to go and conquer that fear, but succeed in conquering those fears. I'm not perfect yet. I'm still learning. I can say on a recent trip to the Upper Peninsula with my dad and with my brothers, I was actually comfortable on the bridge I hate the most in the whole United States, the Mackinac Bridge. My least favorite one, partly because it is long, unnecessarily so. I mean, I get it. It was a quicker way than going around Wisconsin Bend. But half of the bridge is metal grates that you can see through. And the other half is, you know, blacktop, whatever. But as my dad even reminded me this time, that bridge can sway 30 some odd feet any given direction while you're on it and you don't know it, that doesn't make me want to drive that bridge. Oh, no, no, no. But this time, I didn't cover myself with a blanket. I didn't need to hop in the back. I was in the back, but it wasn't as though I was afraid that we were going to go over the edge or fall through it, or that gravity would be shut off and away I would float. Those moments didn't come. And I've had breakthroughs over the last year and a half since our trip out to Washington, D.C. and to Philadelphia, because even though generally the therapy that I was hoping to get from this particular gentleman wasn't the best for me, he at first was very dismissive of it, which is not fun for anybody. Nobody likes to feel as though their fears and predilections are ridiculous, but I digress. The fact that he was able to pinpoint the actual problem and then to let me walk away and to work this out day by day, step by step, has allowed for me to receive joy in the journey and to breathe through it. Now, we each have our stuff, right? We can testify to that. We all have those moments in our lives when it just gets overwhelming and our fight or flight mechanism usually doesn't include the word fight. We want to run. We want to hide away from our own anxieties, our own fears. But each day we're getting stronger. Each day you're getting stronger. Each day I'm getting stronger. And it helps me to understand that tomorrow's another chance to go over another hill, to go around another curve, whether it's literally in a vehicle driving, or whether that's more metaphorical, and it's me as a husband, me as a father, me as a teacher, lots of curves and hills there, as a brother, and as a son. And it's amazing sometimes how hard we work at each one of those relationships, because each can inadvertently stress us. That's likely a conversation for another day. Family's fun to pick apart. But for me, the knowledge that I gained by taking care of myself, actually doing self-care. And let me tell you, gentlemen, the most masculine men I know in the world believe in self-care. It's good to talk out this stuff. It's good to be right with yourself. I highly encourage it. And for my female friends, I've learned so much about self-care and about mental status and being aware that I can say fully that I am enjoying this experience of letting go of that holding on. I don't fear the idea that anxiety is going to shut off because the gravity is not going to shut off. I don't fear letting go of my anxiety because I understand it better. And in doing so, I truly hope I can let it go one day at a time with the gravity on and not crawling under my car. Bless you, my friends. Please join me next time here on The Art of Letting Go as we prepare for our 10th episode. Until then, I'm James Steensma. Take care. Hey friends, it's James. Listen, anxiety and depression can be brutal. It's hard some days to even get out of bed while we're still managing those issues in our lives that we haven't let go of yet. I know. But when we're ready to admit that we have a problem, and when we're ready to admit that we need help, start first with the Anxiety and Depression Association of America. They've got incredible tips. They have ways that you can reach out and get support right from that organization. But if that in and of itself doesn't help you begin and you want to talk to somebody right away, remember to text 741-741. That's the crisis text line. And if you are in a state of anxiety or depression or stressed over a situation, the folks at the crisis text line can and will help you come up with some tips so that you don't have to live in that state anymore. Thanks for listening, friends. I look forward to sharing with you next time on The Art of Letting Go. Until then, I'm James Steensma.